Merry met, virtual traveller, and welcome to Stories from Lore, a podcast that invites you to rewild yourself through story by exploring nature, folklore, and the stories it inspires. My name is Dawn Nelson, and I'm an author and professional storyteller. The theme for this episode is castle dwellers, and so we're exploring some of the folklore, nature, and stories that are associated with ruined castles. For the story trail section of the podcast, we're off to Old Winchester Castle and the Great Hall to explore dark tunnels and graffitied walls. So come with me to a place where old stone walls will tell us stories.
Did they shoot arrows through it?
It might have done, looks like they might have done, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit dark down here, isn't it?
Am I sure if there's anything in there?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's just a gate that used to lead somewhere.
Creepy if there was a
skeleton in there. It would be, wouldn't it? That's the thing about castles, though, isn't it? When they haven't been used for a long time. What do they feel like when they haven't been used for a long time?
Haunted?
Haunted? Oh, I hope not. You feel the walls. Do the walls feel like damp, don't they? They've been holding the water. Look, somebody's made a mark on this wall here. CMG. I wonder who that was.
Colin. Toby. Georgia.
Maybe. Shining a torch down there. It looks like a corridor that went on for a really long time and some more steps, doesn't it?
That looks creepy. I think this is haunted.
You think?
Yeah. Well, people might have died down there.
Well, they might have done, yeah.
Can you point it at the houses?
Yes, there's a nest there.
Oh, there is, isn't there?
It might be some dungeons down there.
Maybe, who knows?
So maybe the people did die down there, and maybe it was haunted.
I know that they're stories.
They are, they're stories, aren't they? Stories we like to tell each other. Why do you think we like to tell each other those stories?
To try and stop your egoic emotions.
Yeah.
Because you probably shouldn't go, like, if you were like a little Roman child or something, or medieval child, there might be stories about that being haunted.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't go down there, so they would cause trouble or go and maybe
stop you getting lost, wouldn't it?
Or barking or get into trouble with some people that are.
Yeah. This might be it. There's something scratched in the wall here. An ancient image of a crude drawing is what it says, wasn't it? A crude drawing of a knight on horseback. It could be it.
I can see the person.
Yeah? Can you see it? Can you point it out to me? Show me where it is.
I think it's there.
Yeah.
You can see
it. I think that's where it is as well.
Dad, we found it!
Castles and ruins are a huge subject. My husband and I once went on a tour of Henry VIII's castles, situated along the south coast. We were in a 1990s Lotus Esprit, back in the days when a mortgage was a distant possibility and children were but a twinkle in the eye. But that, my friends, is a story for another day, and perhaps one I will tell. We still love exploring castles, and as you can hear from the audio that you've just listened to, our daughter now accompanies us. In fact, she often insists they have a tower so that she can climb it for the view. Castles hold so much history. Echoes of the past in the damp, weather-worn walls. They were once places of violence and war, but also places of community and protection. As a result, centuries after they served their purpose, there is plenty of folklore that surrounds the castle and its keep. There are the stories of castles and towers that dwell in history, and each castle has its own story to tell. whether it be of famous battles and sieges or wicked kings and prisoners, there is always a story or two lurking in the old stone walls. One of the most famous of these stories is The Princes in the Tower, which is the legend of Edward V and his brother Richard, Duke of York. These two brothers were said to have been placed in the Tower of London as children in 1483 and held prisoner by their uncle Richard III. Still to this day, we are not really sure what the full story was behind this tale of warring families. Staying with the Tower of London for a moment, here it is said that if any of the six ravens that live there ever leave, well then this will be the downfall of the tower. Furthermore, beneath the tower is said to be buried the head of the warrior and gigantic man Bran the Blessed, whose tale is told in the Mabinogion. And as long as his head stays there, then Britain will be safe from invasion. To add to this, the legend can be linked to the folklore of ravens, as Bran, a Welsh name, can be translated as raven. There is a wonderful story of one of the more modern-day ravens, Munin, going missing and turning up in someone's back garden, whereupon the resident rang the raven master at the tower and was given instructions as to how to retrieve the raven with some chicken, a towel and a sturdy pair of gardening gloves, for the future of the tower depended upon it. There is a link to the video of the raven master telling us about this little bit of modern folklore in the show notes. There are plenty of ghosts associated with castles, perhaps those echoes I mentioned earlier. At Castle Rising in Norfolk, it is said that Queen Isabella conspired to murder her husband, Edward II, and succeeded. She was imprisoned in the Norman Keep in solitary confinement and went mad through lack of human interaction. Her screams were said to be heard for miles around and are still occasionally heard. It was a disembodied voice that told the people building Killaly Castle in Northumberland that in order for it to survive, it had to be moved. The voice was recorded as saying, "Killaly Castle stands on a height. It's up in the day and down at night. Build it down on Shepherd's Shore. There it will stand and ne'er fall." At Castle Undinus in Cornwall, now little more than the earthen banks and ditches of an old hill fort, we find King Arthur again, for he appears in many places across England and Wales, and this time we find him at his favourite hunting ground. On the moor surrounding the castle, hunting horns can be heard at night. In this way, King Arthur has become one of the many possible leaders of the Wild Hunt, a spectral hunting party associated with black dogs, Herne the Hunter, Norse mythology, the Old Woman of Winter, and, well, many more. If you would like to know more, I tell Herne's story in the first episode of this season of the podcast. Giants are often associated with castles. Arundel Castle in Sussex is connected with the giant Bevis of Hampton. His sword, which is 5'9" long, is kept in the castle, and it is said that his tomb is possibly a long barrow not far from the castle walls. Bevis worked at the castle and was said to be so tall he could walk to the Isle of Wight without his head ever being under the water. Back in London again, two giants accompany the mayor each year for a ceremony before he takes office. These giants are known as Gog and Magog, and the statues of them stand in the Guild Hall in London. Various legends have surrounded them, one of which being that they are giants defeated by the first occupiers of Britain, and as a consequence they were sent to guard the Royal Palace in London. John Carter, a former curator of the medieval collections at the Museum of London, believes that these figures are in fact Corineus and Gogmagog, characters from the legend that tells of soldiers arriving from Troy and landing on the coast of Britain, namely Cornwall, and discovering a land inhabited by giants, whereupon they set about slaughtering the giants, Gogmagog being one of the last. I'm inclined to agree with him, and there is plenty of evidence to suggest this is the real legend and mythology behind these two statues. One of the nastiest inhabitants of castle ruins lies in the Scottish borders and goes by the name of Robin Redcap. This being is a usually male, pixie-type creature, but it is far from cute or mischievous. It's downright vicious. It is described by William Henderson in his book Folklore of the Northern Counties of England and the Borders as having long teeth and talons, fiery red eyes, wears iron boots, holds a pike in his left hand, and wears a red cap, hence his name. The cap is red because it is soaked in the blood of his last meal. What does he eat? Well, humans, of course. One of the most famous tales associated with red caps and castles surrounds Hermitage Castle on the Scottish borders. Here, William de Soulis was said to have summoned a red cap in order to aid him in his defence of the Scottish borders during the 14th century. Whilst de Soulis is no longer alive, it is said that the red cap still haunts the ruins, waiting for unsuspecting victims. As mentioned before, This creature is particular to Scottish border castles, and there are said to be few border castles without them, as they were once drawn there by the bloodshed that these places have seen. The Moddy Doo is a bit of black dog folklore from the Isle of Man. As you might expect, it was said to be a black dog that used to trot into the officer's room at Peel Castle and sit by the fire. No harm came of anyone as long as they didn't try to harm the Moddy Doo. There was one incident when a soldier did try to frighten the dog off, but it ended badly for the officer in question, and so as far as I know, the Moddy Doo has been left alone to pad about the castle still to this day. If you would like to know more about black dog folklore, then have a listen to the first ever episode of this podcast, For Fearsome Spectral Hounds, Good and Bad. There are so many more castles and many more stories that I could tell you about, not to mention the fairy tale princesses that were often locked away in them, such as Rapunzel and Sleeping Beauty, but I will save the motif of women trapped in towers for another day, and instead I'd like to tell you a story that was collected by the Grimm brothers. This story is called The Youth Who Went Forth to Learn What Fear Was, and it's the story of a boy who had to spend a night in a cursed castle in order to find his fortune. There once was a boy who felt no fear. He wasn't at all bothered when horses reared up at him. Not at all concerned about any bogeyman that may lie beneath his bed as he slept. And not at all concerned when his parents shouted at him. As he got older, his mother and father sought him a job to keep him out of harm's way. They asked him what he wanted to do. He said he wanted to know what fear was, and that he would go out and find himself a job to do just that. He started by taking to the sea. He joined a very fine ship, which travelled many of the seven seas. But he kept saying the wrong words. He didn't pay attention to the captain's rules on superstition and what you should or shouldn't say on a ship. And it unnerved the rest of the crew, to the point where there was almost a mutiny, and he was eventually set ashore. He returned home and he asked for a job with the local blacksmith. The blacksmith didn't have a problem with this. Somebody who has a healthy respect for fire but not necessarily a fear is probably quite a good thing for a blacksmith. However, this boy, well, he ended up getting burnt multiple times by the fire and the irons that were within it. And then when he was taken away from the fire so that the blacksmith would create the horseshoes and the boy would shoe the horses, well, he was kicked by several horses as he did not recognise when the horses were frightened. Finally, his parents got him a job with the local priest in the church. He was to guard the graveyard, so we say, make sure there were no ne'er-do-wells hanging around there and make sure that there were no grave robbers. Well, he certainly did frighten away the ne'er-do-wells and the grave robbers, because he would wander around the graveyard singing the most haunting tunes, and he didn't understand why people didn't like it. And the villagers that lived near the graveyard, well, they were never able to sleep for this terrible wailing sound that was coming from the graveyard, and so, well, he lost that job as well. And so he said to his parents that it was clear that there was no job for him in this area. There wasn't even a job for him at sea. So he must go on a journey across land and see what he could find along the way, and see if he could make his fortune. His parents agreed and they sent him off with what they could, a small amount of money and some bread and ale to make his way into the world. He travelled to many pubs and inns and towns and cities. He slept beneath the stars. He frightened many sheep in many fields, and he sang with many owls in many dark woods. Eventually, he arrived in a town where his destiny lay. He sat by the bar, drinking his pint of ale, and he listened to the conversation of the locals, for this is often where you'll get the information that you need. And he heard that in the neighbouring city there was a king who was looking for a brave soul to stay in a cursed castle. That brave soul needed to stay there for one night in order to lift the curse, but that nobody had yet been able to do it. If they were able to do that, well, then they could marry the princess and they would have riches beyond their wildest dreams. And so it was the young boy headed off to find this castle. When he did, he knocked on the door and he said, "I am the man who will stay in the cursed castle for one night." Well, of course, the guards, they had heard this many times before, but they knew that the king would want to see him, and so they took him off to see the king. The king told him the story of how the castle that they now stood in was not his original castle. It was much smaller than the one that stood across the way, and he pointed out of the window to a castle that was buried in the clouds, dark and gloomy. He told him of how someone had to stay in that castle for one night for the curse to be lifted, but that whilst they were there, they would experience horror like nothing they had ever experienced before. They would have to be extremely brave in order to survive it. If they did, of course, well, then they could marry his daughter, and they would be heir to his throne, for he would be forever indebted to them. The boy agreed, and he was told that he could take three things with him, and that the king would provide him with these things. And so the boy asked for an axe, a blanket, and something to light the fire. After a hearty meal in the palace, most of the palace residents thinking that this would be his last meal, he set out across the valley towards the other castle. Along the way, he gathered some firewood with the axe, and when he arrived at the castle, the first thing he did was set the fire and place one of the benches next to it so that he would stay warm overnight. Despite the newborn flames in the fire, something fell down the chimney. Dunk, dunk, dunk. The boy reached out, picked it up, and discovered it was a leg bone. He leant forward into the ample inglenook fireplace and looked up the chimney and shouted, "Where's the rest of you?" Dunk, dunk, dunk. Another leg bone came down. He again said, "Where's the rest of you?" And then dunk, 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 a skull. Well, the boy took hold of the leg bones and the skull and cleaned them off with the blanket and then proceeded to play balls with them. He stood the leg bones up neatly at the other end of the hall and he rolled the head towards them and quite happily played balls until two enormous cats came yowling into the room. They were huge, gigantic cats and with the most enormous claws, which tapped on the wood floor of the hall as they came in. "We're cold," said the cats. "Will you let us sit by the fire?" Okay, said the boy. "Do you like cards?" they said. "Will you play cards?" So the boy did. Why would he not play cards with these cats? They had, of course, brought their own deck of cards, and they began to play. They placed a little bet that if he lost, they would eat him. This didn't particularly bother him. Partway through the game of cards, he grabbed hold of the enormous paws of the cats, and he chopped off their claws with the axe. After that, the cats, well, they looked more like the little cats we have in our houses these days. Finally, after all that activity, the boy was pretty tired. And so he went upstairs in the castle to see if he could find a bed in which to sleep. He found a beautifully, ornately carved four-poster bed with what looked like the most sumptuous mattress he had ever seen in his life. A far cry from the bag of straw that he slept on when he was at home. He got into the bed and pulled up the counterpane over him. It was a little cold, so he put the blanket that he brought with him over it as well. He was well and truly asleep when he awoke to find the bed being dragged around the room by some unknown force. It was like a bucking bronco, jumping up and down, rocking back and forth. And in order to stay on, he looped the blanket around one of the posts of the four-poster bed. And he managed to stay on as if riding a horse. He was actually really rather enjoying it. The bed took him across the landings, through the other bedrooms, down the stairs, up the stairs, and back into the bedroom where he had originally been. And when it eventually stopped, he jumped off and said, "My, that was a thrilling ride," he said. "Got any more?" And he sort of shouted this to the ceiling and the walls and, well, anything that he felt might have been listening. But, well, nothing else happened. In fact, he slept more than soundly for the rest of that night in that very four-poster bed. The next morning when he awoke, the sun was coming in through the window, the birds were singing, and the castle felt like an altogether different place. There were no longer dark clouds surrounding it, and at the door there was a knock. He went down and he opened the door, and there was the king with his retinue, many soldiers and all the courtiers, and they were cheering and thanking him for lifting the curse on the castle and that once more they could all live there. The king was most amazed that he hadn't been frightened to death, as all the others had, by the skeleton that fell down the chimney, or eaten by the cat or trampled by the bed. The princess was, of course, offered, as was part of the deal. Now, the boy, he said to the princess, "You know, you don't have to marry me. I'll be very happy with that other castle just across the way, as long as the king is happy to give it to me, of course." But the princess, she was curious. He was handsome enough, and he was definitely wily. Someone without fear might actually be a good thing for their kingdom. It might help them in battles and wars, and it might mean that other people stayed away because they knew that this man, would not shy away from a fight. And so she agreed she would marry him. Over the years, they grew to love each other. But there was one thing that really irritated her about him. It was the constant boasting about how he was scared of nothing, and that he would never ever know what fear was, and he so wished he could. And so one night, whilst he was asleep, she crept into the bedroom with a bucket of cold fish. She pulled back the waist on his pyjama trousers and poured the bucket of fish down them. He yowled as he woke up, and he made such a fuss, dancing around the room. "Get them off me, get me off me," he said. And then he felt a shudder all the way down his spine, from the top of his skull right the way down to his tailbone. And he looked at her and he said, "At last, now I know what fear feels like." And so it was, dear listener, that the boy who went forth to find out what fear was did exactly that. And of course, lived happily ever after. Thank you for joining me amongst the ruins for this episode of Stories from Lore. For more folklore and stories, you can subscribe to my Substack newsletter. Just hop over to the Substack site and search for Ceridwen's Cauldron, or use the link in the show notes. You can upgrade to paid for just £5 a month for an extra dose of wild storytelling to your inbox. Signing up as a paid or free subscriber is much appreciated and helps to support the podcast and my work with folklore and story. This episode's extras will include a look at the slightly more fluffy versions of red caps. These are our household helpers, and the essay is entitled The Rise of the Gonks, and will be available by the end of February. There will also be a written version of the folklore included in this podcast, and a link to the Spotify playlist, which includes a variety of castle, tower and ruin themed music. As well as Substack, you can find me on Instagram as Dee_storyteller, and on Facebook as Dee_storyteller. Reviews are always gratefully received, and your support is greatly appreciated. I hope to see you there, as I'd love to tell you another story. Until next time, toodle-pip.